what do you do if you are part of a group or an organisation, but you disagree with the way in which it's being run? That's the dilemma, it seems, that many of our MPs are facing at the moment. What do you do if you're unhappy with the way that your party is being led, or if you disagree with the direction it's taking, or if you perceive that there are problems that aren't being addressed? Earlier this week, seven MPs resigned from the Labour Party in protest at Jeremy Corbyn's approach to Brexit and the anti-Semitism in the party. They were subsequently joined by another Labour MP and then three MPs from the Conservative Party. Some people have described it as a wake-up call to our party leaders. Others have talked about building a new politics. And still others have said that they choose to remain as members of their parties in order to change things from the inside. Whatever you think about the new independent group, however mixed their motives may or may not be, those 11 MPs evidently felt that they needed to publicly take a stand and to confront those in leadership about the impact of their choices and their behaviour. I wonder what you'd do if you were in their shoes. Are you someone that would embrace the public confrontation or run for the hills because you can't stand that sort of thing? Well, this morning's reading from Galatians is about a public confrontation in which one church leader challenged another about the impact of their behaviour. So there are some similarities here in that sort of discomfort, I guess, about the choices that are being made. As I said at the start, over the last couple of weeks in our sermons, we've been thinking about disagreement and whether it's possible to disagree well. And the advice that's come out of our Bible readings so far has been about how to resolve or how to de-escalate arguments. And what makes this Bible reading today interesting is that confrontation and conflict are part of resolving the problem. So what's going on here? I think it's probably worth taking a bit of a while to look at some of the backdrop to this and then also to understand what's going on, because if you're anything like me, when I hear a Bible reading in church, it sort of washes over me as just lots of churchy words that don't necessarily connect. So the two of the key figures in the early church were Peter and Paul. Both of them were Jewish by birth. Both had had powerful encounters with Jesus in their own way, and that had caused them to become Christians. Peter was, in effect, the senior leader at the church in Jerusalem, which was predominantly made up of Jews. And as a Jew, Peter had, of course, been raised to believe that Jews were God's chosen people. And so God gave Peter a vision, which you can read about in Acts chapter 10, and it was a vision of all sorts of animals that he might have regarded as unclean, which God said to him, you know, nothing that I've made is unclean. And it caused Peter to say this: I now realize that God does not show favoritism, but accepts from every nation the one who fears him. So although Peter ministered primarily to the Jewish community, his worldview had been transformed by his Christian faith, and he recognized that the Christian message was for all people, not just a particular group. Paul, on the other hand, he believed he had a special calling to share the Christian message with people who were from non-Jewish backgrounds. So you'll often hear Paul described as the apostle to the Gentiles, Gentiles being the term used for those who weren't Jews. So earlier on in Galatians, Paul writes this. He says, those esteemed as pillars, that's the church leaders in Jerusalem, gave me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship when they recognized the grace given to me. They agreed that we should go to the Gentiles and they to the circumcised, that's the Jews. All they asked was that we should continue to remember the poor. So the backdrop to this argument is a recognition that the Christian message is both for Jews and for Gentiles, and it's also an affirmation of the different approaches that were taken by Peter and Paul. They had different sort of foci in their ministries. So what went wrong if it started from this place of agreement? Well, like one of our previous Bible readings, this is a disagreement over food. But this time it's not about what you eat, it is about who you eat with. In the Jewish community, Jews did not eat with those who weren't Jews, because those who weren't Jews were considered to be ritually unclean. But in the Christian community, everybody ate together, and it was a sign of their equality before God. So Paul writes that when Cephas, that's another name for Peter, came to Antioch, he says, I opposed him to his face, That sounds like the arguments that go on in my daughter's school playground, I have to say. I opposed him to his face. And Paul did that because in the past, Peter had eaten with the Gentiles, but now he had stopped. And he'd stopped probably because he was frightened about being condemned by or judged by another group within the church. It's not clear whether they were a group of Jews who were in effect saying to Peter, you're not a proper Jew, nor is it clear whether it was a group of Jewish Christians who were in effect saying to Peter, you're not a proper Christian. But either way, the issue at hand is that Peter has changed his behaviour, and that has made him a hypocrite. So what, you might say? Plenty of Christians are hypocrites. Well, actually, plenty of humans are hypocrites. Who cares where Peter sits to eat? The problem is that we're told in verse 13 that the other Jews joined him in his hypocrisy. So all of a sudden, this integrated Christian community, who all ate together, all their different backgrounds and cultures and perspectives, suddenly that community was divided. Jews over here, everybody else over here. Yesterday, we held a community lunch here at Good Shepherd in the hall, and it was aimed at anyone who might appreciate the opportunity to share food in the company of others. We had some lovely home-cooked food. Thank you, Margaret. We had great company. There were 24, 25 of us. But just imagine how people would have felt if when they had arrived, I'd said, welcome, welcome. Do you go to church regularly? No, just Christmas. You sit there then. Thank you. You're here twice a month. You can sit on that table. Sorry, how often do you come? I don't recognize you. No, you're over there. Thank you so much. I know you. You're here every week. You can sit here. I mean, just imagine. Or if I divided along different lines. Imagine how hurtful it could have been if I'd said, I'm sorry, have you been married previously? You sit there. Are you single? You sit there. Have you got children? You're there. You've got children? No, you're there. All those sorts of things. Are you originally from London? You're on this table, but you can't mix with those who are born in other places. It would have undermined the very purpose of the meal. That kind of division that would have been cruel and confusing and hurtful, to be invited to anything labelled community and then to be excluded, in effect. So this argument in Galatians, yeah, it happened hundreds, thousands of years ago. It feels a million miles removed from us. But actually, it's not just about seating plans, because it undermined the very message of the gospel, because it took this beautiful ideal of community and it created this division. So rather than the Christian community being one family, Peter's behavior seems to suggest that actually one cultural group, one ethnic group, one racial group was superior to another. And so that meant that membership of God's family wasn't dependent on the grace of God, it wasn't dependent on the invitation of God, but suddenly it was suggested that you got to sit at the top table if you were born into the right cultural group. And it was a total denial of that revelation, that vision that Peter had, in which God said, nothing I've made is unclean, and in which Peter himself said, I recognize now God has no favorites, because Peter is all of a sudden showing favoritism to people who are from the same cultural group as him. There are some really big issues underlying this argument in Galatians. We don't actually have time to dig into them properly today, but anybody who would like a coffee or a beer, I would happily oblige and buy you one. Because there are some big issues about the relationship between culture and faith, and the extent to which our culture might shape our faith, or our faith shapes our culture, and whose culture predominates, and why, all of those sorts of things. So there are some big issues at play, and actually we see them being played out in the national church as well. Paul is actually very happy for people's culture, for their background, for what they've grown up to believe is right, to shape their faith in some contexts. So that's why in Romans, he's prepared both for the Christians to keep following the Jewish food laws and not eating certain things, but he's also prepared for them to abandon the Jewish food laws, because for him, it's just food, it's just what you eat. The difference here, that when it becomes about people and the exclusion of people, he is then saying, you know, this compromises the heart of the gospel, which is why Paul opposes him to his face. It's what he says in verse 14. They were not acting in line with the truth of the gospel. You can see how something that's about cultural practice, what I eat, is different to something about who I eat with, that is what the Christian message stands for. And when it comes to disagreements, that's something that we have to think about. Does this issue that we're disagreeing about undermine the grace of God? Does it make the gospel about law, about the things that we do, or does it make the gospel about the grace of God and God's initiative, God's invitation, God's generosity? I started off talking about the Labour Party and some of the issues in the Labour Party, the fact that they are arguing over racism and anti-Semitism. Isn't it interesting that some of the issues that are raised in this Bible passage here are about racism and anti-Semitism or Semitism? But I also want to suggest that in today's church, there are some other more subtle dividing lines that are perhaps the things that on a week-by-week basis that we struggle over a bit. We may not make people sit separately for meals. Well, I hope we don't. But who do we sit next to in our services? I wonder if today we are sort of divided along lines of tradition and taste and perhaps theology as well. And often those will shape the way that we behave in church. Our tradition, our taste, our theology will shape sometimes who we talk to after the service. They'll shape who we associate with, the groups that we go to, who we feel comfortable with. And obviously, to some extent, that's fine. We are often drawn to people who in some ways are like us or where there's a natural connection. But I think also it's easy to allow those things to begin to subtly divide us and undermine us. I wonder if we tend to stick in our comfort zones, stick with those who share our tradition, our taste, or our theology. Towards the end of the passage, Paul offers a way forward for people. He says this in verse 20. I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. And I think what Paul's saying is that he no longer identifies primarily with his Jewish heritage. Of course he's going to remain a Jew, but that's not what he identifies with. He no longer identifies with the community that he grew up in. He no longer, I think, identifies as a man or a member of the elite. Because what he says here is, I choose to identify with Christ. And so those other selves, those other representations of me, have died, and he is united with Christ. Or for our context, faith is no longer primarily about our tradition, our taste, or our theology. It becomes about Jesus. It becomes about the worship of Christ. Faith is centered on him. And I don't have to cling to those other things because I choose to cling to Jesus. Yesterday at this lunch that we had, I was talking to someone who used to come to the Good Shepherd. In fact, she started attending the Good Shepherd in 1946, which I thought was pretty impressive. And I have to say, it took me a little moment to pluck up the courage to go, so why don't you come anymore? Which I'd been desperate to ask, but always felt it was maybe just a bit rude. And she said that her husband had been church warden here, and they'd been very involved. And after he died, it just wasn't the same coming to church here without him. And she, every time sat in the pew, was aware that he wasn't next to her holding her hand, which I found very affecting, actually. And so instead, she started going to church with her son and with her grandchildren. And what she said is that the church she now goes to is very, very different to here. But then she went on to say, but it's so good, and let me tell you what's good about it. And then she told me about all of the things this church are doing and what she appreciated. And I was hugely impressed talking to a woman who was mature. And I don't mean mature because she came here in 1946 and her hair is white. Because I thought this is a woman who's actually just gently let go of her tradition, her taste, maybe a bit of her theology, her comfort zone, in order to embrace this new context. And I found it very humbling, and I felt she was a woman who was worth listening to. Later on in Galatians, Paul is going to write, there is neither Jew nor Gentile, slave nor free, nor is there male and female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. And in this day and age, when there is so much division and so much exclusion, I find that vision of oneness really compelling and attractive. I am not saying by any means that it is easy to achieve. And that's the challenge for us as the Christian community. We are called to be that attractive, compelling vision of oneness, to try and live that out and to try and be it with all of our beautiful difference. For Paul, that oneness only becomes possible when we just gently loosen our grasp on those other things and instead focus on Christ. Again, I am inspired and challenged by what I read in the Bible. I hope it is food for thought for you as well, for here, for work, for home, for all the different disagreements and challenges you're living with. I pray that the wisdom of God speaks to you and gives you life. Amen.